is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Hotel Mars, episode N. We're going to the moon. We're going to the moon again and again and again. A program that NASA now shepherds all of these moon landers called CLIPS. What is CLIPS? That's why Jeff Faust, senior staff writer for Space News, is here to help us understand the NASA program, Commercial Lunar Payload Service, CLIPS, and the first several missions that were successful and are under review for the next mission. Jeff, a very good evening to you. CLIPS, what is the mission that NASA puts in front of all these commercial enterprises? Good evening to you.
Good evening. You know, CLIPS, the Commercial Lunar Payload Services Program, is an effort by NASA to help foster the development of commercial lunar landers that can carry payloads, scientific experiments, technology demonstrations, things like that, to the surface of the moon. And so what NASA does is that they buy lander services from companies. Rather than buy the lander themselves, they will buy payload space on these landers. They'll provide the payloads. The companies will take those payloads, put them on the lander along with other payloads from other customers, commercial, other government agencies, and the like, and then send the missions to the moon.
We're going to deal with two moons in detail. Jeff has written this up for Space News, and I recommend. But we go to, there's one called Odysseus, affectionately known as Odie. There's another one known as Peregrine. Odie is a success, but there are details here. Odie ended its life, a short brief life on the moon on February 29th. I want to go to the analysis by the executives at Intuitive Machines, the sponsoring company. Odie was designed to land on four legs. There's a photograph of it in your at your Space News column. What do we now believe happened to Odie that it tipped over? How is it explained?
Yeah, the idea is that the spacecraft is designed to use a series of technologies to figure out its altitude and its speed as it was descending to the lunar surface. And one of them is a laser rangefinder, which, as the name suggests, is a laser that shoots down at the surface and tells you how far away from the surface you are and can help you determine the speed. Well, once they got to the moon and went into orbit about a day before landing, they discovered the laser rangefinder wasn't working. They had evidently not flipped a switch on the ground before launch, and they could not change that once the spacecraft was now in space. And so they tried some other techniques to be able to navigate down to the lunar surface, and it almost worked. The spacecraft was designed to touch down at a speed of about 2 miles per hour, and it ended up landing at a speed of about 6 miles per hour. That was fast enough for at least one of the landing legs, maybe two of them, to break as it hit the ground harder than expected. And that caused the lander to tip over partway. You might imagine the lander's got six legs. If one or two of them are broken, you're going to lean over to the side to some degree. And it turns out, there, by their best estimate, it's teetering at about a 30-degree angle off the ground. So not a perfect landing, but it was still enough that the spacecraft could operate with some tweaks to the communication system and the payloads, and was able to operate on the surface for nearly 1 week.
And it operates on solar power, correct? So it needs to it needs to face the sun or keep in the sun's light. Were the solar panels at odds with the sun? Were they leaning in the wrong direction?
Some of the solar panels were not pointed in the best direction, but there were still enough of them on there that as long as the sun was up, it could generate power and operate. On the moon, you have a two-week lunar day followed by a two-week lunar night. So at the end of February, the sun set for 2 weeks, and that meant that no sunlight and no power, and so they shut the lander down.
Now, there are a number of names here. I need to sort them out. There's Intuitive Machines. That's the name of the company. There is Odysseus. That was the name of the first lander. And there's now going to be Intuitive Machine 2, which is Nova C lander design. Sort that out for me, Jeff. What does Nova C mean?
Yeah, you're right. Intuitive Machines is the name of the company. And so they've designated their missions IM-1, IM-2, and so on. For this first mission, IM-1, they gave the lander a name called Odysseus, or Odie for short. IM-2 will be based on the same design. That design is called Nova C. And so basically, they're using the same lander design for IM-1 and IM-2, as well as a third mission, IM-3, that they'll be launching at some point next year.
Is this one of the landers? There have been a series of them, sometimes from other countries, that have attempted to land near or in the area of the South Pole of the Moon. Is that where Odysseus landed?
Odysseus landed near the South Pole of the Moon at about 80 degrees south, so closer to the South Pole than any other mission so far. An Indian mission last year landed at about 70 degrees south, and that was the record up until IM-1 landed.
And now we go to the prospect of Intuitive Machines 2. Again, IM builds the machine and NASA buys space on it. Is that how it works?
That's right. Through the CLPS program, NASA buys basically services from these companies to transport payloads to the surface of the moon. So they did that with IM-1. They'll do that again with IM-2. They're going to send on IM-2 a series of instruments to basically test the ability to potentially drill into the lunar surface, look for water ice that may be below the surface, and perhaps ways to extract that water ice for processing, which would be key for any future human missions to the south polar regions of the moon, being able to access and make use of the water ice there.
Water ice is the desired beachfront property. Now we move to Peregrine. This is another private company called Astrobotics. Peregrine's mission did not get to the moon, did not get into lunar orbit. What happened to it?
Yeah, Peregrine launched in January on the Vulcan rocket. The launch went perfectly. Everything was going well with the spacecraft until about 6 or 7 hours after launch. And there was a leak of propellant from the spacecraft. And that leak caused the spacecraft to temporarily lose control. And once they recovered control of it, they determined that there wasn't enough propellant on there to be able to attempt to do a landing. And so basically the spacecraft went out to around the distance of the moon and came back and did a reentry about a week and a half after launch over the South Pacific, ending that mission.
Your report indicates, however, there were scientific packages on board that were able to conduct themselves to collect data. What kind of packages?
Yeah, the instruments were originally designed to operate on the surface of the moon, but the scientists took advantage of about the week and a half that they had in space between the Earth and the moon, and were able to at least test out the instruments, see that they could have worked if they had landed on the moon. And a couple cases, such as instruments designed to measure the radiation environment, were able to take some useful data that scientists are looking at now. There was even a small student-built rover built by students at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. Obviously, it couldn't rove on the surface of the moon, but they were able to turn the rover on and check out its systems and even turn the wheels a little bit to show that it could have worked if it had landed.
Do we know why the oxidizer leaked? Is there an explanation for the fail?
The leading explanation is that there was a failure in a valve in the spacecraft, which caused helium, which is used to pressurize the tanks, to sort of rush in into this one propellant tank and overpressurize it and cause it to burst. Astrobotic has convened a failure review board, which is common for any sort of mission that fails of any kind. It has some outside expertise involved, as well as the company's own personnel. They're looking at that now, and they think in a matter of weeks they'll have that investigation done. So they better understand exactly what happened and make sure that does not happen again on any of their future missions.
Yes, the future mission. Now we come to the hard decisions. There is a Griffin, which is Peregrine 2, called Griffin. These names, you need a scorecard. All right. Now, NASA's depending on Griffin to carry a lunar rover on board to make the landing. Is there any hesitation now after that first failure?
Well, you know, the concern about Griffin is that it's not just a copy of Peregrine. It's actually a much larger lander. So it's a more complex vehicle. And so the fact that Astrobotic could not land on their first mission makes some people wonder if there should be additional testing or other checks or other work on that lander before it launches. And I think we will hear more from NASA once the Failure Investigation Board is done about what changes will be made to Griffin to avoid a repeat of what happened with Peregrine, but also any additional testing that they want to do, because they're putting a pretty expensive payload. This Viper rover that would fly on the Griffin lander is about $500 million spacecraft, and it's designed to rove into lunar craters, to prospect for water ice, particularly in craters that are always in shadow and therefore should have some ice in them. Obviously, if you're flying something relatively valuable like that, you want to be sure that what's carrying it to the moon has a good chance of working. So I suspect we will see some additional testing, and that may delay the launch, which was scheduled for late this year, to perhaps some point next year. But we'll have to see in the coming weeks after the investigation is over what the plans are going to be for Griffin and for that Viper rover.
I'm curious how NASA works with a private enterprise. Is NASA on site as it's built? Does NASA have a review process once the private enterprise hands it over, given that they're working together? What is the trust between them, Jeff?
Yeah, certainly NASA has some degree of insight to what's going on in these companies as they're developing these landers. But the idea is that this is being done as primarily a commercial effort. This is not a traditional relationship between NASA and a contractor, where the contractor does whatever NASA tells it to do and gets paid in the process. These awards are fixed price awards. NASA is paying a fixed fee to these companies, and it's up to the companies to be able to deliver at that price. And so the idea is to be a little bit more hands-off, leverage some of the capabilities of the private sector, allow companies more freedom to do things in a different way that may be more cost effective than the traditional ways of flying missions. Certainly, there is some risk with doing that approach. NASA, from the very beginning of the CLPS program, more than 5 years ago, referred to a philosophy they called shots on goal. That is to say, they did not expect that every lander would succeed, just as not every shot on a goal makes it into the net, that there will be some failures, but the benefits of leveraging the capabilities and the potentially lower costs of commercial ways of doing these missions would outweigh any sort of additional risks from these mission failures.
You name a pantheon of NASA stars that are now attached to astrobiotics: Steve Clark, Frank Perry, I see Jim Reuter's name there, Mike Gazarek. So they're bringing on board the veterans of NASA to review, to work with them. What is their role?
Yeah, some of these people are actually going to be senior employees at these companies. Steve Clark will be a vice president. Frank Perry will be director of engineering. So they're going to play leading roles. Others will serve as more informal advisors. But I think Astrobotic wanted to show that it was taking advantage of the expertise that is increasingly available in the private sector from companies, from people that had worked at NASA and can provide their own years of experience to these companies that are still starting to stand up the best ways to do these missions, are learning lessons sometimes the hard way in the case of Peregrine on how not to do these missions. But, clearly they're wanting to demonstrate that they're making every effort possible to ensure that future missions will be successful.
CLPS. Commercial Lunar Payload Services. What is the future? When we come back, the next and the next and the next. Jeff Faust is a senior staff writer at Space News. I'm John Batchelor.